D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, is also with us on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Elliot Friedman, also presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, how much do Canadians pay attention to the NCAA tournament?
You know what? We do. I used to cover NCAA basketball, a lot of it. As a matter of fact, when I was in high school, and even before, I used to tape the entire NCAA tournament that was available to us in Canada, and I kind of rewatch it in the summer. But I stopped doing that. You know, when the NBA came to Toronto, it kind of ruined it for me because, one, I didn't have as much time to watch it, and two, the NBA game was so much faster, right? Like, the NCAA game was slow to me. But people still fill out brackets. I still have people periodically who say to me, who should I pick in the bracket? Because they remember I broke in covering basketball. But I won't tell them because I don't want anyone betting on anything I say because I just don't watch it close enough. But we watch it up here. We like it.
So, Elliot, the GM meetings, are they still ongoing or are they done?
They're done. They ended yesterday.
Okay.
I'm back at home.
So the GM meeting. All right. Oh, yes. Instead of beautiful Florida. The GM meetings are over, and the playoff format is a hot topic of conversation in the NHL. Gary Bettman is dug in on this playoff format as we know it right now, but there seems to be a lot of support for a change. Is there anything in your mind that can convince Gary Bettman to perhaps reconsider the playoff format as we've known it for the past several years?
Well, the one thing, Adam, is I know he's against expanded playoffs. That he's dead set against. I've had this argument with him before. He does not like the idea of adding in more teams. And I'm against him on that. I think they should, but he's a no. Where I wonder if there's some leeway, because I do think in the CBA negotiating, the players will at least bring it up, is can you change the seeding in the conferences? As in, instead of having it the way it is, can you go Western Conference, where Nashville is, 1 versus 8, 2-7, 3-6, and 4-5, et cetera? That's where I wonder if there's a bit of leeway. Like, I got a text yesterday from a player going into yesterday's games. Dallas was number 3 in the league, and Dallas was number 3 in the league, and Colorado was number 6. And in the West, Dallas was number 2, and Colorado was number 4. And he said, like, why should these teams be playing in the first round? He said, that's a Stanley Cup final. If you can make it so that they don't play in the first round, shouldn't we be doing that? So at the very least, Adam, I can see a situation where the players say, how do you feel about going 1-8 in each conference instead of what we have now? But expanding the playoffs, I disagree with Bettman on this, but he's got 50 billion votes, and he is dead set against it.
So, Elliot, the Toronto Maple Leafs will be in town here in Nashville on Saturday. Give us a state of the Toronto Maple Leafs as they arrive in Nashville later this week.
All you need to know, Adam, is that a week ago they lost to Florida at home, and my Leaf-loving buddies were like, that's it. We can't win a division. We're doomed to play Tampa in the first round. We're dead. And a couple wins later, my those same friends are like, we're back. We can win the division. We're 2 points back with a game in hand. We've got this. So as you can see, all is normal in Toronto.
Yes, always.
Elliot, another team that is in the midst of a run here is the St. Louis Blues, and we just saw them here.
Yeah.
And the Predators play them again on Sunday in St. Louis, and then back here again next week. So three matchups in 10 days. Yeah. And I heard you on your podcast talking about the Blues and their momentum, and they've got a softer portion of the schedule. So first, give me your thoughts on how St. Louis has gotten it together, and then I've got a follow-up on the Predators part of this.
Well, I mean, but the thing with St. Louis is, like in 2019, Doug Armstrong was so annoyed at his team, he sent out a memo saying, I'm willing to trade just about anybody, and Binnington got hot and they won the Stanley Cup. Like, he should do this every year. He threatened to do it again this year, kind of, and Binnington's gotten hot and they're winning again. I think, number one, I just think as a group, they've played a lot better. The underlying numbers, since Jim Montgomery took over as head coach, the underlying numbers are very good for them. If you take a look at kind of how, I don't know if it's exactly expected goals or chances. I can't remember which one it is. But since Montgomery has taken over, their statistical numbers in terms of the way they defended are among the best in the league. And so that obviously is a major reason why they've gotten better. I do think that, you know, one of the things I heard was that with Braden Schenn, when it was rumored that he might be traded, and, you know, Toronto talked about it and some other, Ottawa talked about it, I heard the players there were really galvanized by that. Like, you're not leaving, are you? So I think that between the way that Montgomery's got them playing and just a little bit of a kick in the butt, I think it's worked very well for them, Willie.
I talked to Hal Gill the other night about the Predators being finding ways to motivate themselves and playing the, quote, spoiler, right? They've got two more with St. Louis. They've got a couple with Utah, who's on the bubble. They've got a game in Columbus coming up. These are all games where you might play the card to try to make sure your team's playing their best to say, hey, you can spoil this guy's season. Hal did not like that at all. He said for him, it was just about playing well. It was not about getting extra motivation for a team that's out of it to play the spoiler. What kind of feedback do you get from the players you talk to about that?
Well, you know what? To me, I think it's about pride. It's, you know, you're getting paid. Fans are buying money. Like, you know, fans are paying their hard-earned money to come to your games. You should, as a professional, you should put up a great performance, or the best performance. You're not always going to be great, but the best performance you can. Like, Willie, like, you know, we all know what it's like. Well, it's never happened to me, but you go on radio and you have a bad show. You know if you have a bad show. And the next day you're like, people are listening to me. They've given me their time. I better do a better job. Like, I look at it the same way for hockey players who won't make the playoffs. Somewhere, somehow, that's one thing I always loved about Michael Jordan, is that I remember him saying once that there's somewhere tonight, there's a fan in this stadium that spent their money to watch me play, and I better deliver. And whether you were like the 70-win Bulls or you're the Predators this year who won't make the playoffs, I think you have that responsibility. And the other thing, too, is, yeah, like I remember years ago when Tampa Bay was not very good. They were having a really rough year, and they were playing Florida, which was trying to make the playoffs. John Tortorella was coaching the Lightning, and he didn't care that the Lightning weren't very good. He wanted to beat Florida. He wanted to ruin their season. He looked at it as a source of pride that he could potentially ruin their season. And I think that to me it's a big thing. Like, you should look at it like that. And I hope the Predators do. Like, why not try to ruin somebody else's season? I would be all over that if I was a player.
Elliot, I saw a report, and I can't remember, forgive me, for who put it out there, but it was a study of the number of penalties that have been called compared to in previous years, and it's quite a bit down.
Yes.
The power play opportunities are down.
Jason Gregor.
Jason Greger was the reporter who
covered. I found that very interesting anecdotally watching the Predators here, because they've been looking at this and saying they feel like there's been some games where they should have called more penalties. They're not getting as many opportunities as they feel like they should have. I'm sure all 32 teams probably feel this way a lot of the times. But in talking to some people about different theories as to why it's down, one thing that came up that I thought was intriguing, a little outside the box, it seems like there's a lot more young officials who are a little more inexperienced getting at the games, and maybe they are deferring a little bit, and maybe, I think the word came up, scared maybe to call too many penalties. But give me your theory as to why you think the number of penalties have gone down, the power play opportunities.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Will. You're the first guy to say that one to me.
And this is not coming from me. This is coming from people that I've talked to as theories, without any evidence.
I am going to put in my blog today that Willie Donick says the referees are scared to make penalty calls. And watch Nashville not get a power play the rest of the season.
Well, one thing that I think we can agree on, I don't know how this works, Elliot, but it seems like when you're out of the mix, and let's say it's a game like tonight where you've got two teams that are out of it, I don't know if you tend to get more inexperienced referees in that game. Is that fair to say?
I could see that. You know what, Willie? I could see that's fair. Yeah, I can see that. I mean, Utah's not out of it yet. This is a huge game for them. You got
Anaheim tonight.
Excuse me. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, you know what? I see that. You know, it's an interesting theory. It's an interesting theory. Like, I saw that Jason Greger wrote it this week, and I was kind of like, and I didn't realize it. I hadn't seen it. You know, I'll say this, like, I was kind of like, I better start looking at it a little bit more. You know, every night I look at it and I say, there are penalties I think they miss. I think that's normal to look at it and say, you know what, there should have been a penalty call here, there should have been a penalty call there. But I don't know that I've looked at games and say, there's 5 or 10 missed calls. You know, and I always think there's always penalties they call, and I'm like, are you serious? You haven't called much all night, and that's the one you call? So sometimes I do have those moments too. I'm still formulating my thoughts on this one, Willie, but you know what? It is interesting that you said that. I think it is an interesting theory. Like, I was just at the GM meetings, as Adam mentioned, and there are three officials there who were there, who were longtime officials, Don Van Massenhoven, Dan O'Halloran, and Rob Schick. And those were longtime referees, and they weren't afraid of anything. And you know what? I could see something along those lines where maybe some of the referees are a bit too deferential. It's possible, but I wouldn't say that I would agree with that 100% yet. I have to say, I'm still wrapping my head around this and why it's happening.
All right, I got one more for you because I know you follow these things closely. There was a situation in the game against the Blues where early in the second period, Michael McCarron hits a guy up high, Busnevich, and it was the right call.
He got ejected, right?
He got ejected, and they called the 5 minute. They reviewed it, and they determined yes, this is worthy of a game misconduct. And I thought it was the right call. It was unfortunate because I think McCarron saw a guy that had the puck and suddenly he didn't have the puck, got him up high, no question about it. Later in the game, there's a very similar action where Luke Evangelista got elbowed in the jaw and went down, and they called illegal check to the head and didn't review it. It looked like the same exact type of situation where, again, you have the tool to go look at it. And if you determine it's only 2 minutes, sure, no problem. But they didn't review it. That's why I wonder what the discussions are like on when to use that.
The only thing I can think of in that particular case, and again, I didn't see it, and I'll go look at it maybe for next week and see if I change my answer, is the only thing I would think in that particular case, Willie, is that in the McCarron play, because, as you said, it was the puck was involved, I bet you they wanted to look at it and make sure it wasn't like in that situation, they're probably looking at it and making sure, was it late? Maybe they were trying to make certain there was no other body contact first. Like, I didn't see it. But what it says to me, Willie, is in that case, they were more sure about the Evangelista call and what it should have been, as opposed to the McCarron call and what it should have been. Now, maybe they were right or wrong in that determination, but when they don't review it, it says to me they're sure of what they saw.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, presented by Old National Bank. Get old here on D-Mace Vingan and Donick. Elliot, great stuff as always, and we will talk to you next week.
Have you filled out the brackets, Elliot? Do you have a winner?
No, you know what? I didn't this year. I probably would have picked Auburn, but I didn't this year. I know that'll get me killed in Tennessee. I wanted to tell you guys that I have to save it for the pod, but Barry Trotz came up to me at the GM meetings and asked me a trivia question that not only stumped me, but had me unable to focus on my life for almost 15 hours.
Okay, well, there is a great teaser for the next edition of the 32 Thoughts podcast. Elliot, thank you so much. We'll chat next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
Elliot Freeman on the program. Now, I can't wait to hear what that trivia question is. The 32 Thoughts podcast, the second episode of the week, usually drops on Fridays, if I'm not mistaken. So look for that wherever you find your podcast. One quick score update. Creighton 83, Louisville 71 with 1:12 left in the second half. So it appears that Creighton is in position to win this game. And
there's
if they
still,
do
a chance,
advance,
still a chance. Still a chance.
Yes, it's not over till it's over.
Yeah.
If Creighton advances, they will take on presumably Auburn in the second round. Auburn taking on Alabama State in a 1-16 matchup. Speaking of Barry Trotz, however, I was reading something on The Athletic about the Predators the other day. And when I read this about the Predators and Barry Trotz, it kind of stopped me in my tracks. And we'll discuss that next. 615-737-1025, live out at Boomba's in Murfreesboro. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game. It's Vingan and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary. At Bet365, we are out live at Boomba's in Murfreesboro. We will be out here through 6 o'clock. Stillman and company will be here from 2 to 6. Tomorrow we will all be out at the Spring Hill location of Boomba's. So if you missed us today, don't miss us tomorrow at the Spring Hill location of Boomba's. So
upset alert.
Just talk
upset
to
alert.
Freeman. Upset alert. What's that?
Purdue 59, High Point 56, 7:19 to go. Purdue is getting what I would call the tight blank. The tight blank. Mm. Right now, you've got right now the classic atmosphere in a building where everybody's rooting for the underdog, the crowd's going wild. Anybody who's not there to watch Purdue is rooting for High Point, and Purdue has sort of been in the lead the whole game, kind of in control. All of a sudden now, High Point's made a run. They've got two free throws here to cut it to one. And Purdue is, we know, kind of feast or famine in these tournaments, right? They have been really good.
That's why I picked High Point when we did this yesterday.
Yes. So I can't believe you haven't mentioned this, Adam. Where are
That's
you?
That's why I did this.
Are you not watching this game? Let's go.
Well,
get it on.
I am. We do have one final, Creighton 89, Louisville 75.
Yeah, so Jared's
Creighton
like, thanks a lot, Willie, for the optimism and jinxing
will.
It. Because I said Louisville would cut it to five.
Yes.
That did not happen.
Well, you know what? I'm still reeling over Americans' loss last night in the first four, depriving us of the all-Vingan matchup, Duke and American. I'm just hoping that Duke now beats Mount St. Mary's by 50 to make up for it. So that is tomorrow. But Creighton 89, Louisville 75, final in the first round in Lexington in the South region. So just talking to Elliot Freeman. And I was reading a story on The Athletic from one of Elliot Freeman's fellow insiders, Chris Johnston, of The Athletic. He was doing his regular Ask CJ mailbag. And he received a question from a reader, Justin M. What's the plan in Nashville this offseason to get this team back on the rails? And I thought that Chris Johnston's response was interesting. He writes, quote, "The Predators seem to be operating in a way that suggests they are not an off-season fix or two away from re-entering a contention window. They spent big in free agency last July and have been paying for it ever since with an aging roster that is full of holes. GM Barry Trotz recently warned there may be some pain, in quotes, ahead while the franchise pivots to acquiring and developing more young talent, which essentially carves out the path immediately ahead." Here's the key line. "While there doesn't appear to be a full-scale rebuild on the horizon, Trotz is going to be pursuing forward-thinking moves this summer that may result in a team that doesn't win as much next season." And I found that to be interesting because when I hear Barry Trotz speak weekly with Jared on Tuesdays, I hear a GM who is intending for his team to be competitive next season. And then I read Chris Johnston saying, again, quote, "Trotz is going to be pursuing forward-thinking moves this summer that may result in a team that doesn't win as much next season." So, Willie, when you hear that, what do you think those quote-unquote forward-thinking moves could be?
Well, I think there's a lot of different ways you can go. I have heard Barry Trotz say a lot of things. If you listen to him long enough, he is going to give you scenario A, scenario B. So if you're honing in on one thing, you could quote one thing, and then in the same interview, he could give sort of a different pathway to the same idea. So I would look at it this way. You would have to take a look at what is out there in the free agent pool and see, is that in your budget? Can you go get another top four defenseman on the free agent market? I'm not sure if they can do that. They do have a lot of draft picks. For example, St. Louis came in here the other day. How did they jumpstart their team? They took two players off of the Edmonton roster by signing them to offer sheets as restricted free agents, and those guys have hit big for St. Louis. I think that's one angle that
Phillip
could be a
Roberg
forward thinking.
And Dylan Holloway.
Yeah, Holloway's had a career year. He's got over 20 goals, and Broberg has had a really good breakout year, and he's super young. He's only going to get better. So that move has worked as a home run for the Blues, and I think it's been frowned upon across the league to do that in the past. It shouldn't be, and I think Barry Trotz has the ability, the flexibility in the roster and the draft picks to try to do that if he thinks the right person is out there. So he's used the word pain a bunch from the very, very first day that he took over, where he said there's going to be some pain. It's again, has to do with bridging the gap between the older roster that he has now and the younger roster that he thinks is still probably a year or two away from really seeing what you've got. Like, I think Fedor Svechkov is a great example. What he is now is not what he's going to be in 2 years. But is he going to make a big jump, or is he just going to be a decent NHL player? That is the big question with a lot of these young players.
So, Willie, with that being said, because, listen, Barry has been upfront about, you know, what he expects from this team and the expectations. Yes, you want to win, but you understand that, listen, we may not be in a position to win right now. He said that last season, but he went out and he aggressively got some guys that he thought was going to make his team better. Now, it didn't work out the way he thought it was, but that doesn't mean you scrap the whole thing. But can you go into another off season and preach that same message and then miss the playoffs for a third year in a row? I don't think you can.
It wouldn't be a third year in a row. Next year would be a second year.
Exactly. No, second year. Yeah, second year in a row. That wouldn't land on the fan base like it did this previous season.
You're right. You have to be careful with that, especially. And I don't think he has used the term thread the needle, and I think that is basically what he's trying to do, is thread the needle, is be a competitive team, while you have Stamkos, Marchessault, Yossi, Forsberg, those guys who are at a stage of their career where they want to win, and they've only got a certain amount of time left. They're on the back nine of their career, most of those guys. And at the same time, he knows a lot is riding on all of these young pieces that he's been talking about for a couple years, none of which have really blossomed yet. And if anything, a couple of them have gone backwards, right? We know Luke Evangelista has had a really tough year. And Zach LaRue and Fedor Svechkov, 21-year-old guys who I think have a good future. They certainly aren't the person that's going to just come in and be a game changer right away. You know, those guys are really rare, and those guys aren't those guys. So what do you do in the meantime to try to make the team better? One thing we know, Barry Trotz is going to do a lot of interviews. I don't know what he did, if it was an off-the-record discussion he had with Chris Johnston, where Johnston is quoting directly from a conversation he had, or is he taking a piece of a bigger interview that Barry did either on this station or somewhere else?
So this is my question for Predators fans, and Derek touched on it a little bit. It would be a hard sell, I think, for a lot of Predators fans if the Predators went into next season and, you know, they thought, hey, we're taking that step back. And look, when I was near the end of my time on the beat, I implored the Predators to take a step back. I said they will not get better until they allow themselves to get worse. But when you sign the contracts that Barry Trotz did in free agency, that creates expectations of a competitive team. And I'm just wondering how the Predators would sell that to fans that, hey, last season we all had high expectations. Well, the fans had high expectations. Barry Trotz did try to temper those expectations, but there were high expectations for the Predators. It didn't work out. But next year, you know, there might be some more pain, despite the fact that we signed Steven Stamkos, among others. So I'm just, that's my roundabout way of saying I'm not sure how the Predators could sell that to their fans after this season went so horribly wrong.
But I don't know that they'll have to sell that. They're going to have a lot of the same guys, right? I don't see a scenario where they don't have O'Reilly, Stamkos, Forsberg, Marchessault, Yossi, Saros, right? That's the core of your team.
Right.
They're going to be back next year. It's just a question of what the expectation level will be, not only from the Predators' perspective, but around the league. I think there's going to be automatically some skepticism that the Predators will be a bounce-back team. I think they're going to look at the year that some of these guys have had and say, is it really realistic that they're all going to jump up and bounce back to their career best? No, but look at the Blues. The Blues, I'm not sure if they'll make the playoffs or not, but I think you look at their top players who they've invested in, they're all having pretty good years. And when that happens, your team is a lot better. I think if UC Saros has a great year next year, if Philip Forsberg has another 40-plus goal next season, I will guarantee you that the Predators will be a lot higher in the standings. How much better? I don't know. I think that's the key. Are we talking about bouncing back and getting into the playoffs, or are we talking about getting to the next level of winning playoff series?
One texter says, I don't know what the Preds are going to do, but I'm officially tired of talking about it. This is not the NFL. Another year of this, people will check out quickly. And that is a fear, especially as the texter says, look, the NFL, people will say, you know, the Titans, we know they stink right now, but people are going to watch the games. Hockey doesn't necessarily have that built in, hey, I'm going to watch no matter what kind of thing. So, you know, I do wonder here, you know, what the Predators' plan is in the offseason, and if they forge a path where the playoffs are not an expectation next season.
When you say forge a path, what would they do? What would be an example of how you would forge a path to take a step back?
That is a good question. I mean, the only thing that I can think of is it would have to involve one of the core players not wanting to be a part of the solution, I guess, would be my initial response.
Okay. but at least on the record, Barry Trotz says he's gone to those guys and said,
yes,
if you don't want to be here, I'll try to move you. Now, maybe there's that got tabled to the offseason, but my gut feeling is that's not going to be the case. Right?
Well, we can continue.
I know this will be something I'm sure we get into throughout the offseason once it gets started. But I, when you say take a step back, I'm not sure what people would have in mind with that, with some of the no-trade clauses, et cetera, that you would have to move in order to step back. And he just elected not to step back with some of the guys he could have traded who are under contract for next year, right? O'Reilly, Sissons, and McCarron, to name three.
615-737-1025. We have some reaction to this on our text line, so we will continue to take it. 615-737-1025. We are live out at Boombaz in Murfreesboro. You can come hang out with us until 6 o'clock. Some quick score updates around the NCAA tournament. Purdue up 66-58 on High Point with 2:55 left in the second half. Wisconsin up 46-38 on Montana with 17 minutes left in the second half. Houston, the number one seeded Houston, 42-20 over SIU Edwardsville. That's a mouthful. SIU Edwardsville.
We need to really talk about the name of that school. I really feel like there needs to be a name change. That's too much. There's too many letters.
We do need to have a discussion with that. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063. The game.
How do you shake things up outside of firing the coach? How do you shake things up as far as the roster is concerned? Would you go to one of your guys if you felt like there was an opportunity and ask them to waive a no movement clause? How do you feel about that?
100%. 100%. I owe that to the team. I owe that to our staff. I owe it to the ownership, and I owe it to our fans. So if there is something that someone that said, hey, you know, would you think about this? Or if I proposed something, if it made some sense, I would have no problem going to the player and say, listen, it's not working. You know, would you consider this? And there's nothing wrong with asking that. They can say no. And some players have done that. And some players that say, yeah, you know, I think it'll work. So all that being said, if it comes up, I have no problem asking.
It was Barry Trotz with Jared Stillman not too long ago. Stillman and Company coming up next right here from Boombaz in Murfreesboro. And a reminder that we will all be out at the Boombaz location in Spring Hill tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. So come enjoy award-winning pizza, handcrafted beverages, win prizes, and watch the basketball games with us. So we do have a lot of reaction, and I do think this is a conversation that we can have here, and we should continue it tomorrow because it really has generated a lot of discussion. One texter says, when you're trying to win, you make moves to win and not rebuild. Taking a step back isn't an option with the roster moves made. So Barry Trotz needs to step forward and not do both. And I think what I was trying to articulate, Willie, I don't know if I did it as well as I could have in the previous segment, was I think that, not to say that we can excuse this season, but We play the clip coming back from break, and there's the sound from you, Ellie. Like, is this an example of a season where everything that could have gone wrong went wrong? And in a lot of ways, it was. So sometimes those seasons happen. You dust yourself off, and you try to rectify it the following season. I guess my question is, you know, are Predators fans in a place where if next season, maybe it's not as bad as this one, but the Predators aren't a competitive team, how will they accept that? Will they accept that? Because it's been, when was the last time this team missed the postseason 2 years in a row? It was right before they fired Barry Trotz, correct?
Correct.
As coach?
The shortened year of 2013 and then the following year, 13-14.
Right.
So it hasn't happened very often, really, since before the first lockout, the lockout where the season wasn't played. So when you mm-hmm. think about that, they have been about as consistent as any franchise, right up there, in terms of being in the postseason the highest percentage of the time. I'd say it's probably in the top 10 of the league.
So there might be some Predators fans out there who can excuse this season because it's been a long time since the Predators have been in this position where they're missing the playoffs more often than not. But I don't know how it will go if this happens next season. Again, I'm not expecting, you know, the shooting percentage to be as historically low as it was at points this season.
And still is.
But I think and still is. But I do think that Predators fans say, okay, this was your one mistake. This was your one blip on the radar. Things better be the way that we are accustomed to them being starting next season. So I'm just curious how Predators fans would react if that wasn't the case.
Well, I think we know how they would react. I mean, this is a passionate fan base that's seen a lot of success. They've got a standard. And so I think there would be, naturally, a lot of disappointment, criticism, et cetera, if there's not much of a bounce back. And so only time is going to tell. I don't think it's as simple as saying they've just flat out been unlucky this year. However, they have been very unlucky. Philip Forsberg, I was looking, he now has hit the post 18 times this year, including two the other night. And that was a game where if he scores on one or both of those, it's a totally different game. And you can go through several examples. And when a team has got the good mojo going, it seems like those goals go in. Last year, probably, they had way more than they didn't in that department. But it's not that simple that that's going to get you alone where you want to go. They do have to make some important key adjustments to the roster. And they've got to, I think, also assess how are they going to try to play. There was some interesting comments, commentary about the training camp, right? Why did they get off to a good start? I think there's a lot of things traced back to that as to how they dug themselves a hole. So there's a lot of things to assess.
Let's wrap up the show by taking a look at the NCAA tournament scoreboard. And just a reminder that all of our NCAA tournament updates are presented by Toyota. Fuel your adrenaline at toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places. Also brought to you by thecumberland.com, Twin Peaks and Bet365. Purdue looks like it's going to survive that upset attempt by High Point. 75-63 Purdue with 25 seconds remaining in the second half. Wisconsin, a 3 seed, a 59-47 lead against Montana. 12:38 remaining in the second half. Halftime, Houston 52, SIU Edwardsville 24. So we won't have to say SIU Edwardsville that many more times. I'm having to make sure I enunciate to make sure I don't trip over my tongue as I say that. You know, the one final, of course, sorry, Jared, Creighton 89, Louisville 75. The next round of games, Auburn taking on Alabama State, tip off at 150. McNeese, coached by future NC State coach Will Wade, against Clemson, coming up at 215. VCU and BYU at 3:05.
Well, I'm looking forward to all these games, man. I'm sure we will get some barn burners, some, you know, last-second heroics. It started early with the Alabama State game in St. Francis, and it seems like it's going to continue, whether it be buzzer beaters or teams coming back from large deficits. This is what March Madness is about. So I'm looking forward to the next couple of days of basketball. This may be, and tell me if y'all agree, outside of probably the first day or you know, opening week of the NFL season, this may be the best time of year when it comes
to
sports.
These 2 days, Thursday,
yeah,
Friday,
exactly.
Wall-to-wall basketball, first round of the NCAA tournament, It's my favorite sporting time of the year.
I enjoy this time of year. Really do.
I'm reminded of all of the times I would watch the games on my laptop in class instead of paying attention in college.
I think you're speaking about the language of about 80% of the college students right around this time.
Absolutely. And you don't have to sneak and watch these games. You can watch them with us. You can come join Jared here at Boomba's in Murfreesboro. We'll be out here until 6:00 tomorrow from 9 to 6. We will be at the Boomba's location in Spring Hill watching all of the NCAA tournament action. We will all be out there. Stillman & Company coming up next, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Be love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, wonderful Thursday. First day of March Madness officially. Peace.